Welcome to Paint Ed. PCA provides painting contractors with connections they need to grow their business. To find out more and to become a member, go to pcapainted.org. Find more great content like this on PCA Overdrive. A subscription to the platform is included with membership. For all you non-members out there, sign up for our free trial. PCA Overdrive is available on the Apple Store and Google Play. In today's podcast, we feature an episode from Ask a Painter Live with Nick Slavik. In this episode, Nick Slavik hosts an open show with various topics, including his upcoming masterclass tour.
Hey, everybody. Happy Saturday. I am Nick Slavik. I'm the proprietor of the Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration Company. I'm also the host of this show, Ask a Painter Live. It is a weekly live Facebook show where I use my almost three decades of experience as a craftsperson and a business owner to basically answer any of your questions. And we're here to collaborate, share some knowledge, share some perspective. It's going to be a good day. We're going live on Instagram. We're going live on Facebook. Today's show is an absolute open show. Any question, any topic, you want to make comments on some work you're doing, put it all in the comments. We'll interact. Same thing with Instagram too. I thought what I would do first is kind of go over the master's classes stuff. So there's a lot of people very interested in this stuff. So I will do a quick screen share on Facebook. Let's see. Come on here. Pull it up. So if you are interested, a lot of people are starting to message me about, hey, I hear about these master's classes. What can I do? Where are they? Can we host one? Can I underwrite one? Well, it's all here for you guys. So there's a link in this show. If you're interested in going to one of them, if you're interested in hosting one of them, it's all here. So you can see it's on the PCA's website here. The PCA and I are partnering up for this. There's not a lot of in-person events around the country. I have a light footprint. I can mobilize quickly. And until we can get these big, monstrous painters events going again, this is what I'm doing. We're doing guerrilla style. We're going to shops. We're going to paint stores. We're going to places. And we're following the capacity rules of whatever state we're in. We're following all the safety stuff. And we're basically getting as many people as we can to get this knowledge out there. Keep painters meeting, keep that excitement high until we can get those big painters events. So this is basically the landing page for the master's classes. There's a whole bunch of topics here and here, cities and dates. Now, the cities and dates on this actual page are only the ones that are absolutely confirmed, done. All I got to do is show up. Now, there's a whole bunch of these. There's probably about 8 or 10 other in the works right now where we're lining up a host. We're lining up a underwriter for it, and we're doing logistics and more to come. So be looking for that. That's going to be absolutely awesome. Let's see. Oh, Dustin, when are you coming to put on your class in CA, California? So we are in the works of getting a California one going right now. Surf Prep has actually confirmed. It's going to be absolutely awesome. Hannah from Surf Prep actually called me the other day. She's like, we got one. We're hosting a master's class. So it's awesome. I am coming there. It's most likely that we're going to go in October because it won't be 180 degrees there when we do that. So look forward to that. That'll be confirmed shortly. Otherwise, folks, it's all right there. There's probably about 8 or 10 master's classes I have. I'm adding more and we're revising all these master's classes. Dustin, we're revising these master's classes all the time. I'm putting exact data from my business from the week previous into these things, and it's going to be an awesome time. So if you're interested in attending, or what's been really cool, like Phil Klein from Iowa, good friend of mine, he just texted me the other day. He's like, hey, I want one in Iowa. If you get a hold of me, if you get a hold of Marcia, if you get a hold of Sydney, and just raise your hand and say, I'm interested, we'll take care of it from there. We can make this happen. If you show interest, we can make an event happen in your area, convenient to you. So Canada, yes, Dustin, your country will not allow us in. So the second Canada allows us Americans back in, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to come see you, of course, in Vancouver and your brother. And I'm also going to go on a fly-in fishing trip in Ontario because I have not done that in a couple years and I'm really missing it. And I would absolutely love to do that. So again, Canada people, if you guys want to host one, we can start the logistics and hopefully the border restrictions come down, things like that. And so basically you just... we'll take it from there, folks. So that is the master's classes. So let's Recap. I flew in very late last night from Washington, from Seattle. And my God, that was awesome. We had a full capacity, sold out master's class. I got to meet a lot of awesome people there. It was a whirlwind because what I do, I have a handshake agreement with my family that, yes, I will travel. I travel a lot, but I will maximize my time, family and Ask a Painter master classes. So what I do is I fly out Thursday night. We usually have a dinner with the hosts, the underwriters, anybody else that wants to be there. I present all day Friday, and then I usually fly out Friday night. And the best flights, well, we have a day full of dance recitals for my daughters today. So it was very important that I was home today for that, sort of the last thing. So basically what I did was fly in, you know, whatever flight I can, and got in about somewhere between 1 and 2 in the morning last night. So yeah, it's been an awesome time. Jim Mallory is a substantial human being. Jim Mallory owns about 20 Benjamin Moore stores over in Seattle. And I had a very long dinner with him and his right-hand man, Juan, his general manager, Thursday night. And my God, did we share perspective and data and all this other stuff. And I just love that sort of thing. As somebody, I'm a fan of anybody who has a goal. I want to own 20 stores by 2020. And then they go out there and do it. It's just an amazing thing. I absolutely love this stuff. So again, great perspective, great knowledge sharing there. And then of course, everybody, Dustin Rasmussen, Ben Taff, all the rest of the people that I actually got to meet in person Friday. So when I know a lot of these people, like the two people I just mentioned and many others from, Cole was there too, from Novo Painting and all his guys. And when I'm actually in one of those classes with my peers, I don't get nervous anymore, but it sharpens your sword a little bit, because this is not one of those like 10X baby, just feelings based, you know, master's classes. This is 100%. Data plus feelings. So I have tons of data, and I know that everybody, it's so awesome. When I click through my slides on these things, I see guys taking out their iPhones and they're actually running numbers like this too, probably to figure out if I'm actually giving accurate information, but probably applying stuff from their own business. So it's actually awesome, man. So, oh man, we had such a great day there. Sarah, the brand manager for Mallory Paints, did all the logistics there. She is a spitfire and she is an effective human being. It's been awesome to work with her. Things just happen. Michael Gogan from Company Cam, he actually underwrote the whole thing. He made it all happen. And Michael actually flew out to meet me there. And we actually did a dual presentation out there. So it was really, really fun. We shared some knowledge. And I love Michael Gogan. He's a substantial guy as well. And it was a great time. So again, people, put all your comments, all your topics in here. It's just a random show, whatever you want to talk about. Oil primer, hiring people, master's classes, state of the industry, in-person events, whatever you want to do, we are here. I got my Google Drive queued up in case we need to search anything. And so let's go through some Instagram here. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. I really do. Oh, Mauro from This Old House. What's up, Mauro? The DuPonts. Love you. I was just in your area, guys. Let's see. How about somebody was asking Los Angeles? So we're getting close. Ricardo, if you want to have an event in your area, all you got to do is email me, nick@nickslavik.com. We can make it happen. I am coming to the San Diego-ish area, probably in October, but I'm willing to do about 3 of these a month. So if you guys want one of these in your area, let's do this stuff. All right, let's see. Let's go through some Facebook comments here. Jerry Williams, good morning. John Milkovich, good morning to you too. And Dustin, coming to Canada. I would love to, man. I believe Dustin is Vancouver. Let's see. David Coles in Calgary. Ooh, that'd be a fun one too. That would be a fun one too. Oh, Phil Klein. Locking down Phil Klein. Hold on a second. Phil Klein is one of my best friends in the industry. Awesome painter, Tama Painting from Iowa. Locking down. Yesterday, we actually just loosened up all the restrictions, I think, mask restrictions, and we're going towards full open in Minnesota. So, yeah, I hope we can get some sort of like continuity through all this stuff. It would make it a lot easier here. So, oh man, Ben Taft, I am so happy we got to actually meet. It's been so fun, like following over the last bunch of months on Facebook there, and we will definitely stay in contact, Ben. It was such a pleasure to meet you yesterday. So, David Cole's best fly fishing trip ever. All right. So, David, I have a plan for you. Email me nick@nickslavik.com. Let's get ahead of the border restrictions and let's start setting up something for later this year. And hopefully the borders will go down. So I would absolutely careful what you offer people. There's people all over the place. They see my spearing videos, pheasant hunting, deer hunting videos. And they're like, oh, we got this place here. We'll take you out there. You be careful. I actually take people up on this stuff. So Jim Mallory is the man. Yes. Jim is a substantial human being. He is he's a force of nature. Let's see. Dustin, any surprising, interesting trends you're seeing in the paint industry as you travel around? Oh my God. Yes. So I will say this too, before we get into this, this show is number 259. The next show next week is 260. And that is a very special show. That is my 5-year anniversary. And that means I have been doing 52 shows a year for 5 years. I have never missed one. I've actually broadcasted from the wilderness in Canada from a fly in fishing trip up there. Dustin, trends. This is something that we talked about, and Dustin Rasmussen and Ben Taft we talked about this when I was at the master's class. So this is something that Jason Paris cued me into a couple years ago, along with his business partner. And we start looking at, so data plus feelings. The feelings is the painting industry is the Wild West, right? It's just a whole bunch of unprofessional operators. And when I say unprofessional, I don't mean bad. It's not a judgment call. Unprofessional is they're not sort of a real professionalized business. They're kind of just, I'm doing this and we're doing it and we're gritting through. And 80% of our industry is basically one or 1.5 painters, which means you have a painter and then your son or daughter helps you in the summer, or you have a helper in the summer, give or take. The industry or the trends that I'm seeing or have been cued into and have kind of waiting to see come to fruition is something called a roll up, which is if you think about taxi cabs are sort of like weird pseudo monopolies. You got to buy a coin or a token or a medallion, and there's only so many of them. It's this artificial economy. It's this weird thing, but there's a whole bunch of random operators. It's an unstandardized sort of product. Sometimes you get good service, sometimes you get really bad, and it's the money is all over the place. And then somebody called Uber came in with tech and first principle reasoning and sort of rolled up the industry. They took all these unwashed, unprofessionalized sort of like cowboy operators out there and basically kind of made them go away with a very with ingenuity and tech and first principle reasoning. So think about coffee shops as well. Like 20, 30 years ago, you would go to cafes, mom and pop cafes and coffee shops, and the product was fairly unstandard. You know, it was very inexpensive. It would vary. The quality would vary from place to place. And, you know, Starbucks came and they offered an ultra premium product. It cost 10 times more than what a standard, you know, see-through cup of coffee is. And it's a standardized product. People know what service they're going to get. It's an ultra premium thing. People will go out of their way to get it. And they didn't make all the cafes go away, but the cafes are sort of like boutique-y now, which is interesting. So you can see some parallels to this in our industry, which would be, we have a whole bunch of unwashed, unprofessionalized people out there. Again, not a judgment call, just unprofessional. And they're out there doing cowboy stuff. And the prices are all over the place. Nobody actually knows what to charge. Most of our industry doesn't know what to charge and doesn't have any continuity in their pricing. The product is wildly variable. There are single owner operators like myself when I was a single owner operator, and my awesome estimator Andy, who owned his own painting company for 10 or 15 years, who were out there fire sailing jobs, basically giving them away for free, breaking ourselves, martyring ourselves for the craft and the trade and for our clients. We're making happy clients, but we weren't making a lot of money early on. And then you have people who are charging a lot of money and ruining houses. So you can see a parallel, and people will argue, well, there's too many variables in this, you know, with Starbucks, you make the product and people come to that. We have to go to the people and make the product, and it's all going to be variable. But I will say, a brighter mind than I turned me onto this. You can see some parallels. If somebody comes in here, you can already see the Paint Zens of the world and all these other little companies dabbling in this. When somebody figures it out, you could possibly be looking at a roll-up. So that's why my focus over the next couple of years is professionalizing businesses. Not because we are going to be rolling up or whatever, but if you have a professional business, not only are most of the friction points going to be gone, you're going to be making more money, you're going to have a fairly standardized product, you're going to be making happy clients, you're going to be able to pay people a very good wage, health insurance, retirement, paid time off. The workforce will become different. We'll get a better quality workforce in here. We'll attract young, bright, first principle reasoning entrepreneurs to the trades, and it will change like that. If you have a professionalized business, when this roll up could occur, you will be in a position to either buy other painting businesses and roll them up, or you will have a sellable asset that somebody who is rolling up the industry might look to say, we're looking for businesses that aren't reliant on the sole person. If you can remove yourself from the business and it still runs, you might have something sellable, an actual asset. I would argue 95% of all painting businesses in the US are not worth anything. So when the roll-up comes, these people are going to be looking, private equity and money is going to be looking for those people who have professionalized businesses, either to partner with, to buy, or to expand and roll things up. Now, one other example would be the brewing industry. I mean, think about, you basically had Budweiser, Miller, Anheuser-Busch, that sort of deal, just these big people doing see-through beer, give or take. Somebody started the craft brewing industry, you know, and they started doing IPAs and, you know, amber ales and stouts and things like this. And they grew it. And all it took was one transaction of a microbrewery. And one of the big boys bought it. $1 billion. And all of a sudden, private equity and all these young entrepreneurs are saying, oh my God, here's this weird brewing, this craft brewing industry. It used to be like jugs in your closet making homemade beer. And all of a sudden, there is money there. Like, if you do this right, if you build a big enough business that doesn't rely on you making homemade beer in your closet, Anheuser-Busch might be looking to buy you and roll you up. So now, magically, we have a craft brew explosion. Every little town, we have towns that are 3,000-4,000 people here in Minnesota got their own brewery. It's just awesome. So you can see private equity and money will find a way to do this stuff. So you can see parallels with this farming as well too, but that's sort of the thing that that's like looking 3 to 10 years down the road. Something like that. What I am seeing, Dustin, and God, we're getting a whole bunch of comments here. I'm going to have to blow through these things. The thing that I'm seeing right now is that a theory is forming in my mind where, again, I think we've realized we've all been dabbling in trying to get employees, get a workforce, grow apprentices and craftspeople. And one thing, somebody called me on my BS because we always say, oh, it's hard to find people. There's no good people out there. Obviously, I'm not a believer in that. But somebody said, any really professionalized business has no problem finding labor. And we talked about this yesterday in my master's class. Again, we had a knee-jerk reaction from somebody that said, yeah, but there's no good people out there. We're keeping employees who don't meet our core values, that are not very good people because we just have so much work to do and we're afraid to fire them because there's just nobody else out there. And I will always push back and say, a really professionalized business will never have problems finding labor. They may have to expend some effort, but they do have a proven process to do it. So what I'm seeing is in Tennessee, I met with two very large commercial painting contractors who are starting small projects division. They are heavily into subcontracting. They are starting their farm teams of employees. These are big subcontractors that are set up to do that. They are actually starting W-2 employee divisions, and they're heavy into, we need a recruiter, we need a trainer, we need an apprenticeship program, we need a training facility, and we're going to keep doing this. Apprenticeship 2.0 in my business, we are doing this right now. Right now, my theory is that in the next 5 years, the market is as hot as it could be. There is legitimately not enough us to go around. We have 25, 27 people associated plus subcontractors in my organization. And we are completely swamped and we can't get to people in time. So my theory to win in the trades in the next 5 years is you will have a person dedicated to finding people, recruiting them, inculcating them in your company, training them, and then holding them accountable. That is not one of these things where, hey, we're going to hire, so I'll put an ad out and then that's done and then we'll go back to work. This is going to be me an eternal process. We're going to constantly have a farm team of apprentices coming in. Many classes, many cycles over a year, we will never stop training. We just cannot stop training because the market is great. People want our services. And legitimately, there's not enough people out there to do it. And we have a proven process where we can pull a lever, find as many decent human beings as we want. We have a training facility now. We have a dedicated trainer and recruiter. We're going to get people in and we're going to keep them coming in and we will not stop. And that's my theory on how to win in the trades over the next 5 years. Basically R&D, research and development, which almost no painting company has. So Dustin, good morning. All right, catching up here. Oh, Jason William. Hey, Nick. Job I recently bid has 3-season porch with 1x6 cedar tongue and groove planking. Wind-driven rain has made its way through the screens and left water stains on the cedar. What product or procedures would I use to remove this without sanding? All right. So there are two ways to address this sort of project. Exterior pine or cedar stuff that needs to be fixed. Most people do the dumb approach. Oh, I shouldn't say that. Most people do a very forceful approach and just take a sander to something, but it's not great because you got tongue and groove and this and that. I prefer gentle chemical restoration and then a light sand after. So if you take we buy bulk oxalic acid. It's actually really comical. It's a white powder and it comes from Florida in this weird package that looks exactly like drugs. And we buy big bricks of this stuff and it gets mailed in these janky boxes from this laboratory in Florida. And we buy it by the 10 pounds, give or take. And we make our own liquid brightener. So we take a big 5-gallon bucket or a jug, and I think we do 8 or 10 ounces per gallon of water. And then we do heavy squirt of dish soap in there to make it sticky. So you get your 5-gallon of oxalic acid and dish soap mixed up. If you just do oxalic acid and water, you spray it on cedar like that, it will brighten it, but it's loose. It'll run down. That dish soap makes it sticky. It'll kind of cling there. We use a 12-volt chemical pump to spray it there. You can certainly use a garden sprayer, you know, the pump kind with the wand, and you do that. Spray that on there and scrub. You want a stiff bristle brush on a pole. You scrub that stuff. A lot of the water stains will come out. Deep water stains and water stains that have been there for years and years will likely not come out. That's just the nature of cedar and pine. So setting the expectations with the client, something we talked about yesterday during a master's class in depth, is a way to sort of temper the expectations of your client. You need to say, listen, here's the experience. We can make it better. In my experience, we can't get rid of them all the way, but we'll do what we can. We'll do this gentle chemical restoration, and then you kind of wash it off. You can pressure wash that, but I'm not a big fan of heavy mechanical means to remove stuff from exterior wood, either sanding or power washing. Power washing for me is a way to use a lot of water, the gallons per minute, to remove stuff from the deck instead of a hose there. So Brian Cheeseman, hey, Nick, why Scuffex for cabinets and trim? What makes it the best paint for your process? So experience. We've used everything. We love a lot of stuff. Just because we choose one product does not mean that there's a whole bunch of other good ones out there. You have to remember, I choose products because I want a ready supply of it. I want a reliable supply of it. I want to be able to get it very quickly. We need within an hour, we need stuff sometimes. And we need multiple deliveries to our shop every week. So there's a lot of these newer 2Ks that, you know, I can only get them an hour from here. They're tinted by a lumberyard by hand. They don't have delivery. There's no logistics. Sometimes they get sent on a frozen truck and they freeze. Logistically, it doesn't work out for my company. So my whole house is Scuffex, walls, trim, cabinets, everything. And honestly, in 29 years, I don't honestly care what the labels of paint say. I have so much experience with the feel and the touch and how something is applied, how it dries, when it dries. Can it be sanded? How is the recoat time? How it feels on a brush or a roller or a sprayer? That tells me a lot about a paint that a label sometimes can't. And there's a lot of products that we use are sort of like, hey, it's labeled for this, but it actually works really well for this. And Scuffex is kind of one of those. Like, you also have to understand that we're aggressively growing a business and we have a bunch of young apprentices. So we need, what we won't be doing is conversion varnishes and very complicated, caustic, hot chemical sort of things that are prone to cracks and failures and fisheye. What I want for my people is an insanely beautiful, insanely durable, insanely replicable, insanely easy logistic finish to apply. And honestly, we found it in Scuffex. It's kind of a wonder paint. So I'm a big fan. It dries arguably as fast as some nitrocellulose lacquers, and that's why people use lacquer. And the story everybody's heard is my cabinets in this house, I did a test, and in about 2 hours and 15 minutes, I double coated the backsides of the cabinet doors, flipped them over on a pipe rack, double coated the front sides, rehung them, no fingerprints, no pipe rack marks. So that's proof of concept, and no failures, insanely beautiful, insanely durable finish. So. All right. Do you have a stat for typical number of painting contractors per 100,000 population? So we can extrapolate that, Dustin. Jason Paris actually did this really beautiful breakdown of why there's no competition really in the res repaint market. He actually figured out market cap in a certain industry of how many gallons were sold and then figured out, you know, if you had a certain size business, how much market cap. We can back extrapolate that, Dustin, if you want to email me, we can figure that out there. Dave Pine, good morning. Scott Jameson, good morning, Nick. I know you switched to SCUFX for your cabinet jobs. Are you still using this and how are you finding holds up? It's awesome. It's awesome. Again, I really want to stress this to people. When I say I use something, it's because I have a very particular state in my business. We are doing one particular thing with certain people on certain houses, and we found something where when we promise something to the client, we can deliver it. Me using something does not condemn everything else, because I'm a fan of everything. If somebody comes to me and says, Nick, we want all of your signature finishes on a brand new custom home, we'll likely use four manufacturers of stuff on there. I cherry pick the things that I find work the best in a replicable process with the logistics of my company, with the apprentices of my company. So I love that stuff. Oh, Phil Klein. Locking down. Good. Locking down dates. I was afraid. I was like, what? Minnesota is opening up, man. We are going to full capacity, no masks, everything else. Good. I'm good to hear locking down dates. Phil, I am there. You let me know whatever I can help. So Phil's a good example here. Phil and I, awesome friends in the industry, talk regularly. Phil just was like, hey, man, how do we get you down here? And immediately he started up my machine and we got him in. We got him contacted with the people. We're setting it up. It's awesome, man. That is so cool. I cannot wait. And I still never seen your new shop. So I would love to come down there and see that. So, all right. Dave Pine, ever done any deep sea fishing? Great fishing here off the coast of Maine. Oh, wait a second, Dave Pine. I need to come up there. I've never done deep sea fishing. Actually, we are going to our island vacation this year with the family. And I was contemplating taking the boys out in a charter boat this year and doing some of that. So, Dave, I feel like Maine would be a really good place to have a master's class. So, Dave, if you want to email me, raise your hand, nick@nickslavik.com. Let's get a class up there. And I will actually stay an extra day or two if we're going to do some deep sea fishing. So, oh, got an exterior wood sealer, preferably clear. Robert Allen. Ooh, there's a lot to this. Okay, Robert. No, the answer is no. Now, a lot of my clients ask me, they say, we just built a brand new deck. I want it to look exactly like brand new cedar. Just put a clear on there. The problem with clears is that they will last exactly 3 months. And then they will either peel off, they will become ineffective. They're basically like SPF 5 sunscreen, which is you have to reapply it every hour, otherwise you're going to burn. Now, you have to ask for me, for decks, for porches, for exteriors of homes where people are asking for a clear. What you have to ask is, as a master craftsperson and professional, you have to say, what is your goal for this project? Are you trying to lock in whatever the look is right now? Do you not want to make it darker? That's the fear of a lot of people, that they have this beautiful cedar deck and they're afraid it's going to turn gray. They don't want to turn it dark chocolate brown, things like that. So you actually have to get to the goals of the clients. Now, what we do not do clears in my company at all, because the theory of deck stains is you have clear sealers, you know, the proverbial Thompsons of the world. If you've ever used that stuff before, it's basically as thin as paint thinner. It doesn't really do much. There's clears. There is translucence. There's semi-transparent. There are semi-solids. And then there are solid stains for decks. Now, when you start here, there's no pigment in that stuff. It's clear. It offers the least amount of protection. It will discolor the surface the least amount. And you go up to solid, which has all the pigment, you lose all the wood tone, and it protects the most. You have to ask your client, like, we actually have a form that we send people for decks that basically lays out, we don't use clear, we use transparent, we use a semi-solid, and we use solid stains. And there's basically saying, here's what it looks like for each one, and here's the maintenance setting expectations. Here's the maintenance regimen for those. If you go deep on the technical data sheets of actual stain companies for transparent stains, it's likely they're going to mention you need to recoat it between 1 and 3 years. Most will be closer to 1 year, like that. I use transparent stains. They have just a little bit of wood tint. That little bit of tint, you know, when you get like a PPG Prolux SRD, that's a natural. It's got a little bit of that cedar tint, and that's not a bad thing. It actually, the more pigment you can put in something, those pigment particles are actually blocking the UV from the sun and will deteriorate the finish and the wood less. So we use that tiny bit of natural tint actually enhances the cedar. So if you take a brand new cedar deck, let it weather for a couple months, wash it, and then put clear on it, it's actually kind of paley and white. This natural finishes will actually preserve that, but you have to be very clear. We talked about this at length. You have to set expectations with clients. We used to get callbacks on decks all the time, not because they failed, but because people used to think they should have lasted longer. Because we were detailing this awesome oxalic acid restoration process, how we lovingly sand it. We hand apply all these oils to the decks. And what people were hearing is, that kind of sounds like it's a lifetime finish. And me being the craftsperson, I know it's 1 to 3 years. You need to recoat this sucker. Otherwise, we start this restoration project again. So setting expectations is clear. Robert Allen, long way around of saying, I don't have a great clear I use because I don't like them. They don't last very long and they don't aesthetically improve a lot of the woods. If you have to use a clear on something like that, like let's say you have a beautiful cedar garage door and you want to preserve the depth of that, there are PPG Prolux products like Door and Window or CTOL, which is a 3-coat system where you could technically use the clear portion of that and do that. But you just have to be really careful that on brand new stuff, you're actually building a film forming finish and it could peel if it's used improperly. So, all right, John Busick, how's it going, John Busick? Hopefully we'll be coming to your area soon here. Vicky Prentice, oh, we communicated about a question you had there on Facebook Messenger. You're correct, there should be no problem finding labor. I agree. It's the same that I find when paint business companies don't want to see my resume. Painting is a business to me, and I will always have a resume. Yep, there you go. All right. Brock, howdy, Chief. Wondering what your go-to caulking product is for interior and exterior work. So honestly, this is one of those unsatisfying answers because you're seeing all of it, and you're seeing the dollar tubes, and you're seeing the $14 tubes, and you're seeing all these other features in between. Honestly, all my experience has been a $2 to $3 tube of a fairly good caulking. You don't take the bottom dollar one. You know, you take the proverbial DAP Alex Plus, give or take, for exteriors. Honestly, we don't have failures. It doesn't crack that often. It's easily workable. You can find it everywhere. It's tons of colors. It works great. I've used $14 tubes of caulk on houses, seen no difference in there. Not that they're bad, not that they're good. It's honestly, if I'm going to pay, you know, 7 times more for something, I want 7 times the value or 7 times the ease of use. And if it's not there, it's not there. Now, this last year, we were actually experiencing some cracking on our trim where we would caulk the joints and things like that. Our caulking is flexible, obviously. And our Benjamin Moore Scuff-X is not. It's very rigid. It's a very tough coating. And they would dry at certain rates. The caulking would cure over time and shrink and crack. So I actually contacted Master Craftspeople Out East. This is why we are connected. I contacted Zach Kenny. I contacted Phil with ZK, Master Craftsman Phil. And I basically just said, listen, you guys do gloss oil, a very rigid coating, and you cannot have cracking on your jobs because gloss oil is not easy to touch up. So what do you use? And they told me exactly what they use. I used it and the problem went away. It is, and I don't have the exact thing. It's an all-pro product. It's a quick dry. It's in an orange tube. We get it here. All-pro is a sundries kind of distribution network. We get ours through Hirschfields here, and we've used it. We've not had a problem since. So again, that's why we're connected with all this stuff. It's a beautiful network of, hey, even me, 29 years, something comes up in the business. We switch to Scuff-X. We're all of a sudden experiencing this problem with the caulking curing at a different rate than the Scuff-X, causing a little bit of cracking. We call a master craftsperson who's already solved this, done. Done and done. No tests, no experiments, nothing. It just works. And that's why we do this. So Dave Pine, I emailed you. Yes, We'd love to set up something. Vibrant paint scene here. Plenty of room at our shop. We have lots of friends and chartered. Oh, man. Okay, Dave Pine. Careful what you wish for here. Dan Zapanzik, how's it going, man? What's your highest margin segment of the business? Are you trying to grow all areas of the business or focusing on specific types? So highest margin is wall painting. Bread and butter, unsexy wall painting, taking tan walls and turning them gray, basically. We do it in a very beautiful, a very simple way, and we perform very well at it. It's not a lot of stuff that would get a lot of likes on Instagram, but it is very satisfying work. Our clients are insanely happy with our process. We give them a premium product at a fairly good price, and we can replicate it over and over and over again. So Dan, I know you guys do insanely high-end new construction. You're dabbling in other things, but carpentry is very good as well. But again, big learning curve. You can't just fire up a whole bunch of finished carpenters and stuff like that. Drywall is okay. It's getting there. We started drywall this last year, and we still got to get our pricing and processes down. I feel like there's a little room for improvement there yet, so but we'll get there. So, all right. Vicky. Oh yeah. No problem, Vicky. Happy to help. Brock. No problem, man. All right. Let's scroll through a little bit of, all right, everybody. Thanks for watching here. I really do appreciate this. This is awesome. Okay, folks. Well, I think I'm gonna have to get on we got dance recitals and stuff today. So we're going to be shoveling my little girls all over the place here. So, oh, Beach House, how's it going? Your thoughts for cabinet paint, Scuffex or Emerald Urethane? Yeah, we went deep on this stuff about 10 minutes ago. So I love both, honestly. So if you look, let's see, on the wall here, that big frame, that dark mirror image, dark frame right here. I was one of the first contractors in the U.S. to do a very large scale project with Emerald Trim Urethane when it came out. It was a really cool project. For one of my favorite clients, they built a lake home. It's a cottage style lake home in the wilderness of northern Minnesota. And they tailored it. They modeled it after like a 1915 lake home cottage. Beautiful, beautiful home. Reminiscent of old stuff. The client is an insanely talented artist. He cut a lot of the trim. He milled a lot of the woods. You know, he felled a tree, milled the wood, made the trim. Cut the oak shakes for the outside of the house, all sorts of crazy stuff there. And we lovingly applied a whole bunch of really cool coatings. At that time, Emerald Trim Urethane was kind of being rolled out through the country. And Sherwin-Williams had contacted me, and of course, they wanted me to try it. And I said, I have a project just for you. Let's partner on this house. And let's do a complete process, start to finish, with PVA primer, with a cashmere mat on the walls, and this brand new satin emerald trim urethane on all the trim and cabinets. And it is beautiful, man. We did this beautiful monochromatic Navajo white scheme, ceiling, walls, trim like that. There's a whole bunch of handmade pieces of wood in there from the artist client there. And my God, is that a stunning house. And we put it in for some national awards and things like that. And it is awesome. But that project is framed. Sherwin actually sent me the magazine article that put on it, framed it for me. And very proud of that project because we actually lived up there in the wilderness. Oh, and you know what? That fish right there, that monster fish, that 18.5-pound pike, I speared in that lake right out in front of that wilderness house out there. So it's a very meaningful lake to me and my family. And, you know, we go up there often at the client's, you know, he's quite kind to lend us that house and go up there. And it's been a lot of fun. But yeah, I love it all. Again, the only feedback I have on Emerald Trim Urethane is the satin is a little bit dull. And if you do dark colors, it takes a very long time to cure and dry. So it is what it is. Scuffex does not do that. So again, I have to look out for my apprentices. I have to do the finest finish I can in a reasonable amount of time for my clients. Most of my clients will not allow me to do a 2,000-hour trim project in their house. They basically say, you have somewhere between 2 and 3 weeks to do all the trim in my house, and then we're going to get sick of you. So we need to come up with a very good process for that sort of thing. So. And oh, Estimator Andy, what's up? Biggest takeaway from the past two master's classes. Oh, Andy Hall. So meeting these different painting companies, that absolutely have no head trash about any of the things that we do. So growing up in this trade since I was 10 years old, I have been laden with baggage of a failed family business and a certain way of thinking about the trades. And I feel like I'm reforming myself and getting there. But every once in a while, you meet people like Chris Elliott and his wife of Onnit Painting, or the Kuipers of Harpeth Painting, and your mind is blown. And it resets what good and fast and value is in the industry. And I walk away from a lot of these things. Jim Mallory, different kind of Novo Painting over in Seattle. I get reset every once in a while. I get exposed to something that makes me think differently about this. And legitimately, it's that perspective. So I'm to the point now where, and you are too, Andy, as a master crafts person yourself, it's one of those things where there's not a lot of questions in coating science anymore. We run into things like, hey, our caulking's cracking, and we talk to Phil and Phil gives us the answer. That's fine. But we don't really, there's no more really big mysteries in the coating science. We know how to do the finest finishes reliably with no troubles. And it works very well. A reliable, beautiful product. Perspective is what I'm after now. I want to be exposed to the outliers. This show dog whistles to a certain segment of our industry that's aggressive and progressive. And I love it. It's sort of like this thing where if you're into this, I want to be into what you're doing. And that's been the big thing. So for me now, it's chasing perspective. I need to be exposed to things that alter the way I think about this stuff and kind of reset what I think good and fast and value and all this other stuff is. So, all right, just going through Instagram here, making sure I didn't forget anything. All right, let's go back up here. Got a couple more questions and we'll call her a day here. So Andy, we got a lot to talk about these master's classes, man. You're going to love this stuff. So Andy and I are actually going to be hosting the Ask a Painter Live retreat this summer. Andy's going to come up and help me run it. So that's going to be a lot of fun. What's your next management hire to expand and remove yourself? John, yes, my rock. I'm a traction guy. My rock for this year is to find Andy, Estimator Andy, a estimating apprentice, and Andy is going to teach that person in conjunction with me, and then I will have almost completed two pods in the business. I'm a believer in the pod system, which is 10 painters, one estimator, one production manager. That's $1 million business unit. And hopefully my rock is to complete those two pods this year. And then basically we already have Justin and Holly, world-class client concierges, production managers. Those are already operating in the pod system. Andy's out there doing 80 to 90% of the estimates right now. He is almost single-handedly selling enough to keep this entire company running. He is doing world-class work. I need one more estimator. That relieves me from the next of my duties. And then, John, the only thing left for me is a little bit of coordination. And what I'm doing right now is Andy has taken off most 80 to 90% of the estimates. I'm circling back around and practicing the craft with my people. And I'm the culture curator basically from here on out. So I freed myself up enough where I just took the last 2 weeks off of running a business and restored that awesome Victorian home with my people. And it was so fun to have the freedom to choose to do that. Being forced to do it. You think about it differently. I would love it. It would be satisfying either way. But when you just wipe your schedule clean and decide to go touch a Victorian home for 2 weeks, it's like, oh, this is delightful now. This is exactly the type of life that I wanted to live. I could either run a business today and go deep on spreadsheets. I could fly and do a master's class, or I could restore a Victorian home or varnish 240-year-old doors and then get on a plane and go see my people in Seattle. So that's the thing. The coordinator thing is something I still need to figure out. The one thing, John, which is really interesting, is that either I haven't approached the business size where I find value in a admin or coordinator, or we're just already dividing the tasks. I feel it's a little bit more of that. So I know we're going to need an admin or a coordinator sooner or later along the way, but honestly, we've crafted a bunch of really interesting sort of like, we've crafted a whole bunch of really interesting positions in my company where we're doing multiple jobs of other people. So it's kind of one of those things where we're dividing and conquering, we're scrappy, aggressively growing business. And we're right now taking the tasks of an admin and dividing them out over four people. So it really doesn't impact my workload, Andy's, Justin and Holly's. but we're kind of doing the work of another person, and the pay and everything is equivalent. We're basically taking whatever budget was for a coordinator and dividing it between the four of us, basically. And I like that system. You know, it's I would rather have more tasks divided among people like that instead of having more people to divide the tasks among. So we'll see. We'll see, John Busick. I'm always open to that, but I'm always cautious about overhead, as you probably are too. So Dan Maggie, screen porch, concrete floor, stain or paint, your thoughts for easy maintenance finish. So there's a whole bunch of, there's two ways to go with this: quick and dirty or anal retentive, insane process. The insane process is diamond grind it down, get a primer consolidator in there, and then do, you know, an enamel over the top, a porch and floor enamel or a concrete stain. Honestly, I've had a really, really good luck with a deep washing, a deep cleaning, maybe even a braiding with like a 60 or 40 grit sandpaper, and then two coats of a water-based concrete stain. It penetrates in, it does form a shell, but it doesn't form like this rubbery waterproof shell. There's a whole bunch of stuff like H&C from Sherwin, stuff like that. I would look into that. I would do a sample. I would always, you know, if they're going to stain a concrete floor like that, I would abrade a section with a random orbital sander or a bigger, you know, floor sander if you have it, and then just clean a section and put a coat there and see if you have any adhesion problems. Look at it for aesthetics and see if it'll soak in a little bit, try to scratch it off, things like that. So, oh, let's see. Oh, Anthony Cade, what's up, man? I found that drywall work has to be priced double from what typical prices are here. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. I would agree, Anthony. So, and I, the good perspective is that you and I are painters. We do a little bit of carpentry and we do a little bit of, well, you probably do way more drywall than I do, but if we were just a drywall outfit, we could probably find efficiencies and charge a little less, but I agree, Anthony. My drywall and carpentry division is there to support my painters. So we are not a full scale tracked housing, slap boards up and tape. We just need, there's such a need for drywall out there. And we just want to support our painters in that. We want to be able to get in there. So I would absolutely agree, Anthony. And the demand is high now where we can do that. I mean, legitimately, there's not enough people to do it. So, oh, Brian Cheeseman, what's up, man? We call cashmere opulence in Canada. Ooh, fancy stuff in Canada. Due to a toilet paper company with the same name. That's awesome, man. Oh, and Brian, I've had a lot of fun talking with you over the last week or so here too. Rob Brown, my local lumberyard is converting to Benjamin Moore next month. Looking forward to using SCUFX. Good. Give it a try, man. Dustin Hutchinson, I would like an employee production tracking spreadsheets if you don't mind. Nick@nickslavik.com. I'll share them for you. Andy Hall, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, John. Yeah. So it's funny. Part of the estimating master's class I did. So again, the two biggest questions I get, because I'm a loudmouth on social media, is people contact me all the time. And how do you schedule? What do you charge for X? I have a 3.5 hour master's class that I did yesterday on what do you charge for X? And it's basically the teach a person to fish theory, which is fine. If you call John Busick and he just gives you his charge rate for a bedroom repaint, it's fine. Doesn't really tell you much though. Like what stage of business is John in? What market is he in? Is he a W-2 company? Is he a 1099 company? Is he growing? Is he stable? Is that his market? Is he in a commercial painter but dabbles in that stuff? Is he a res repaint that dabbles in commercial? So it doesn't really tell you why or how that number is there. It just tells you the number. So basically, I go deep into the theory, the science, and a whole bunch of weird little thought experiments where there's about six ways by laws of deduction you can come up with pricing something. And it's awesome. It's what Andy and I use all the time here and with great success. So Andy's on scale to do about maybe 30 to 60% more than the industry average. And this theory sort of works. Like last year, I did estimates three afternoons a weekend and sold $1.7 million worth of painting. So it's simple, it's effective, and it seems replicable, which is cool. And the clients seem to respond very well to it. It's a nuts and bolts, bread and butter, sort of sexy, but sort of just like master the basics approach to that sort of thing. So let's see here. Oh, Rob. Oh, interesting question here. Can your business model be scaled down for a small town? That is a very interesting question. I live in a town of 7,000 people. I mean, they're legitimately at this time of the year, we get stuck behind tractors on the roads all the time. So it's really interesting traveling around the world, around the United States. Like I'll be in Chicago. And, you know, you'll get a guy, I don't know how big the Chicago metro area is. I'm going to say a few million people. I get a guy raising his hands. There's no good people out there. I can't find one good person. I live in a town of 7,000 people, and we went from zero to 22 people in a year. It's all head trash. It's all head trash. So I don't think you need to scale down, because if you're operating, I'd be curious to know more about that. I've never been asked that question. Now, the only time that you may not be able to grow a business as big as you want is if you're in the hinterlands of North Dakota, when legitimately there's just not enough population within an hour. But most tradespeople are willing to travel 30 minutes to 60 minutes in order to get to their work. 60 minutes puts me at the heart of Minneapolis and St. Paul. We are within shooting distance of everything right here. We happen to be in a town of 7,000 people, but if you think about Minneapolis, St. Paul as this huge metroplex like this, there is obviously the city centers, and then there's the outer ring suburbs here. I'm basically right on the edge of that. We're considered an outer ring suburb almost, and the tract housing and everything is coming down here. Now, in this section, I'm in kind of the southwest down here. All the building, all the remodeling, all the activity is happening between me and that city center. This is a very advantageous place. So we can get to $800,000 houses in 19 minutes here, right on country back roads. And it's kind of this really nice place to be, where we have world-class schools here in my hometown. It's a small town feel, historic Main Street, New Prague. Land prices are cheap compared to everything else, but yet we're within shooting distance of everything here. So McGuire Painters on Instagram. I can't imagine. I live in a town of 300,000 people. You're in a great spot, Nick. I'm from Eden Prairie. Oh man, that's so awesome. It's so funny. Like Dan Livingston, I finally got to meet Dan Livingston over in Seattle. And it's like, he just brought up like, hey, I bet your core demo's in Eden Prairie. I'm like, you know, Eden Prairie, what the heck? So there's a lot of local connections there. So yeah, that's an awesome thing, man. You know that Eden Prairie is the epicenter of a lot of this stuff that's going on. And it's a beautiful place to be. It's small town, rural America. I mean, from my house, you can see maybe one house over here. We got corn growing across here. We got world-class schools. We're close enough we got two grocery stores in our town. We're close enough to Target and all the other things if we want it. And legitimately, we're 50, 55 minutes from the heart of Minneapolis, St. Paul. And I grew up here, so obviously I'm biased, but I think this is a great place to grow a company. And it's been a wonderful thing here. Here we go. Oh, Vicky, where can I access your master's class on estimating? So you could have been in Seattle yesterday. Vicky, where are you from? We are bringing these master's classes around the U.S. So if you're interested in having one near you, we can coordinate that. All you have to do is email me nick@nickslavik.com and I can set you up and we can get this going here. So I'll hang on here for just a second. I will actually do here. Here's a little here. Let me show you something here. A little sneak peek here. So this is something I've been refining over the years. This is about a 3.5 long master's class right here. It goes deep. And so I'm always self-conscious about stuff like this. And this is just a little preview. If you guys are interested in this sort of thing, there are lots of people who travel around in our industry, consultants and things like that, who gather some people up and present, and it's fine and it's good. But most time people are just like, nah, it was fine. It was good. Not a lot of takeaways. I will promise you, this will not disappoint. I am actually operating in this industry right now, doing aggressive things to grow a business, grow coding quality, apprenticeship programs, maximize value, make happy clients right now. So when you come to a master's class like this, oh, Bastrop, Texas. Oh my gosh, Vicky. Email me, nick@nickslavik.com. I do not have a Texas master's class on the books yet. Let's get this done. We will do this. So, Dustin, who's commenting now, this is what he sat through in the morning. I get very self-conscious about this because these are my peers in the room. This is heavily laden with data. And I worry, especially when we have this lunch provided by Company Cam, everybody's got a belly full of food and we go deep into spreadsheets and graphs. I always worry that people are going to nod off or lose interest. People are coming to the edge of their seats because this is actual information from this industry. Here, down to, oh, there's me and Estimator Andy. There. So long class, 3.5 hours, give or take. But what you get is a whole bunch of data. So we go deep into the theory. I give you all of my data. I show you my estimating templates. I show you where price comes from. I can show you how to turn out a whole house trim, cabinet, wall estimate in 30 to 60 minutes, paper copy in a client's hands. Accuracy using apps and technology to get production data so you can actually scale your business up. I go deep on all of this stuff to show you exactly what we're doing, how we're doing it, why we're doing it, and more importantly, the theory behind all this stuff. So it's not charge X for this. It's basically, this is where price comes from. So it doesn't matter if you're in a $300,000, 300,000 people market, you can come up with prices there. If you're in the rural hinterlands of North Dakota, you can come up with another price. We talk about virtual estimates. We talk about our core demo. It just goes deep. So again, if you like this, if you want to like this, this is where we're doing it. We're bringing these around the country in person. Me sending you this slide deck of 89 slides that takes me 3.5 hours to present is basically not going to be helpful. This needs to be parsed out. It needs to be explained. And we need to go deep on this stuff. I show you what a painter should make in a year based on your business size. We go all sorts of thought experiments with things like that. I actually tell you how to schedule using job costing and industry benchmarks. We triangulate prices, you can see here, between experience estimating, production rates. And I even do a market rate experiment. If you come to one of my estimating master's classes, here's what I give you. Determining the market rate, what all the other painters charge on average, what the cost of a bedroom repaint is, we actually do this beautiful little experiment where everybody bids the same room anonymously, all the participants. I put them in a spreadsheet and I actually show you what the average sale price, what the average labor hours and material costs for a bedroom are in your market from the people in that room. It's all anonymized. So we're not looking at Ben Taft's. We're not looking at Dustin Rasmussen's estimate, but I'm giving you market rate data. You get an inside look into all the people in the room, all their estimating and stuff like that. And we break down a bedroom. I show you how production rates are. You get there. We come up with charge rates like that, so you can have a replicable estimate process. We do a thought experiment of, if you know how much money you want to make that year, I can back into that number and tell you how much revenue you have to do a day, how many estimates you have to do a day, how many projects you have to do a year, which is a really, really cool sort of like experiment. We go deep on this. Like, what if you've never done something before using some industry benchmarks? You can back into a number for some weird commercial and industrial stuff. So awesome. So, all right. Well, here we go. Let's see. Dustin, I contacted my SW rep regarding their partnership with PCA. I can't wait. Awesome, man. You will not be disappointed. So, all right, peoples. That's going to be it for me today. Thank you, everybody, for watching. I really do appreciate this. These master's classes, I just get insanely humbled when I travel around. I get reset all the time by contractors doing amazing things out there. If you're alone, if you do not contact other people, if you don't get the perspective from other contractors, you'll have one of two experiences, which I've had both. You think everything you do is a dumpster fire and a disaster, and you're disappointed constantly with what you're doing. Or, which is worse, you can become very happy and proud of what you're doing irrationally. You can think much more of what you're doing than what it actually is. When you go around and see what world-class outliers are doing with no head trash, it resets you, and it's a very valuable thing to do. So that's honestly my biggest takeaways from all these things are getting to see Jim Mallory and how he thinks about owning paint stores and helping his clients, us. When you see the Kuipers, when you see the Elliots, when you see Novo, when you see Ben Taft, when you see Dustin Hutchinson, who's already starting two business units, and then it's just like this resets. It's such a valuable thing. And as business owners and visionary of these companies, we must get that. If you are alone on an island, you will hurt yourself. It's not great. So, all right. Oh, Carolyn Olson, how's it going? Hey, Nick, what are your thoughts about extrapolating your business model to other trades? This is simple. This is simple. This would absolutely and does adapt to every other single trade out there. It's no different. We have variable costs. We have material and labor, and there's benchmarks for that. And if you can track those things and figure out if you're actually making money, that's an easy thing. This is what real businesses do. This is what Best Buy and Target does. This is what large road construction companies do. This is what tech companies do. It's the professionalization of our industry, and the trades is very unprofessional, largely because we have a whole bunch of people who are really good at this, good technicians and operators, and there's not enough good businesses to support them, so they go off on their own. And not all of them are technically business owners. They're technicians and tradespeople and craftspeople. And so they focus on that and not the business side, rightly or wrongly so. But that's the state of the industry. If we had more professionalized businesses, we could provide more value to these people, or they could professionalize their own business and grow like that. So, all right, folks. Thank you so much for this. I really do appreciate this. It is dance recital time for me. So everybody have a good rest of the day, rest of the week. And seriously, people, I cannot tell you how much it means to me that you people will take days off work, fly across the country, come to these master's classes and collaborate with me on changing the trades. It seriously means the world to me. So if you want one near you, raise your hand, email me, nick@nickslavik.com, get a hold of Marcia, get a hold of Sydney at the PCA. We will make it happen. We'll break ourselves to get this to you. So, all right, everybody, have a good rest of the day.
Paint Ed podcasts are produced by the Painting Contractors Association and is made possible by members and industry partners. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org.